Hello.
And we're back.
And
it's closed again.
And hello.
It's an open and shut case.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Trump today on Truth Social. He's been nice guy apparently until thus far.
Yeah.
One of 37 posts alone today, I think in the space of an hour or something. He's hyper on Truth Social. Either he is or he has his staff be hyper. But
it's been a lot. It's been all over the place. The Iranians have said that Trump has made seven statements and all seven are lies, referring to the Strait and all of that. He seems to be like basically claiming everything. They're going to give the U.S. the uranium. They're going to open the Strait completely. They're going to let the U.S. go in and take it like an actual hand-to-hand handoff. It's the way that Trump is saying.
Yeah. It really is the sticking point. That uranium. Like Joe was explaining at the beginning of the show last week, what is it that's driving Trump's reasoning behind all this? Okay, yes. Oil and America's place in the world, its relative position and stuff, but that isn't the day-to-day focus, and hasn't been since he began as a candidate 10 years ago. It's Iran's, well, specifically, it's having a nuke. So it's interesting that both sides are acknowledging that is the main sticking point.
Both sides, you mean Iran and the US?
Yeah, Ghalibaf, the lead negotiator for Iran, saying, no, the fact that he says, no, our enriched uranium is as sacred as Iranian soil.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of suggests never, mm-hmm. But you know that he's saying that to present the toughest face possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're never backing down. The Trump's retweeting. Reading today, no more Mr. Nice Guy, specifically over the enriched uranium. Well, in fairness, the through social post I'm looking at doesn't mention it, but we know that's what the sticking point for Trump is. For a deal with Iran. So it's been Friday, the ceasefire came into effect in Lebanon, and that has 10 days to run. We're 1 week into the US Iranian 2 week ceasefire, so those two things kind of come to an end simultaneously at roughly the same time. Their duration is about the same
of the
Israel Hezbollah ceasefire in Lebanon. And the US.
Well, they're both agreed at the same time. They're part of the same deal. Yeah. In theory, they're part of the same deal. We remember what happened during the week, right? We'll just do a recap of what happened during the week, maybe. In terms of all of that.
I'm not the one
the back and forth.
the back and forth about Lebanon.
Yeah.
Basically... Well, the Iranians insisted that Lebanon be a part of it.
Part of the deal, yeah.
And so Israel said, no, we didn't understand it that way.
And decided to blow it up, yeah. Well, this was last week, right? So this was actually tabled last week.
Yeah.
I think, was it last Sunday or last weekend? When were they doing the 21? It was about 1 week ago. They were doing they did their 21-hour...
That was last Saturday.
Last talks, yeah. 21 hours, so it was into Sunday. And...
And they left. They're saying, no, Lebanon was never part of the...
Right. Who's saying that? Trump is saying that, you're saying, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose this, I think this is what he posted immediately afterwards. So I think, I don't know if we showed this last week or not. Probably did show this last week. Yes, this was April 12th, so 1 week ago. Today, so you have it, the meeting went well. Most points were agreed to, but the only point that really mattered, nuclear, was not effective immediately. The United States so announced the blockade, all being allowed to, it's fancy phrase. At some point, we will reach all being allowed to go in, all being allowed to go out, in scare quotes or in quotes, because that's a special phrase that he learned. All being allowed to go in, all being allowed to go out. It's quite a complex technical term, as you might imagine. I probably have to explain it. It kind of means we're all are allowed to go in and all are allowed to go out. I don't know. Maybe I need to explain that better because it's quite complicated. Anyway, it's one of the kind of complicated phrases that Trump either invented himself or that he learned. And that's why he puts it in quotes, you know, because he's signaling it as a technical term that a lot of ordinary people wouldn't really be able to understand, you know. But Iran has not allowed that to happen. Maybe a mine out there somewhere. Nobody knows about them. And this is extortion. So basically, this was just all happened. This segued it straight into from the talks. So there you have it. The meeting went well, but it didn't. And I'm announcing a blockade. And that's a blockade of the last week, and everybody making fun of the fact that he's blockading a blockade, and you can't really blockade a blockade. Well, it has some sense to it, obviously. The idea was that if Iran was going to try and control the Strait of Hormuz in its favor, basically not allowing only ships in that would, like, say, you know, obviously Iranian tankers, Iranian linked tankers, shadow fleet tankers, quote-unquote shadow fleet tankers, linked to Iran, China, Russia, whoever else had decided it was a friendly country, and do it on that basis, then Trump was going to say, well, no, you're not going to do that, because obviously you're benefiting from that, because, you know, you could prioritize Iranian oil and then do it all on a case-by-case basis, and, you know, favoritism. He calls it extortion, but
favoritism. Yeah, he's been saying that all week.
Well, yeah, he calls it extortion, but it's favoritism. He said that's not allowed to do that, and we're going to blockade the strait further out, in theory, and prevent you from doing what you're trying to do, basically. So even though people are making fun of the fact that it was a blockade of a blockade, then you can't really blockade a blockade. Well, you can.
I want to withdraw my mockery of Trump from last week over this, because my impression is that it actually rattled the Iranians. They took, like, it had real world effects. I mean, because in principle they were really targeting anything going in and out of Iranian ports. It's the US. It's more like as a, not a blockade a la Cuba. It's more like a counter toll booth situation. Okay, so if you're going to do it to anyone you consider unfriendly who hasn't paid a toll or agreed to operate through the strait, through your Iranian rules, well, then here are our rules. And that has the potential to bite. Because remember, Iran actually increased oil exports and got more revenue than ever before of these past 5 weeks, despite missiles flying overhead and everything. So that, I think, turned to zero, or threatens to turn to zero. And that rattled the Iranians. And that's why they went, okay, it's open, Hormuz, at least to, if you follow our rules. And then it was quickly followed a few hours later by, and no, it's closed, around Thursday, Friday this week.
Yeah. They announced that it was opened because of the ceasefire that they had demanded to, and they claimed America backed down and accepted the ceasefire, and Israel backed down and accepted the, or, well, America was always going to agree to the ceasefire. Israel was a sticking point where they wouldn't include Lebanon. Because, again, we talked about this last week with the Israeli, or the Pakistani Prime Minister, who seemed to have posted a tweet on X, announcing, written for him by the White House, announcing the agreement, and that included Lebanon. And Trump reposted it, or the White House reposted it, or whatever. But then very quickly, Israel bombed Lebanon, and bombed Lebanon for a few days. And Trump, as soon as Israel bombed Lebanon, Trump turned around and told everybody that no, Lebanon wasn't included in the ceasefire, even though he more or less, or his people, had drafted the ceasefire agreement posted by the Pakistani Prime Minister, saying that Lebanon, explicitly that Lebanon was included. So that just shows you that, you know, there's obviously pressure from Israel there that dictated what Trump didn't say.
Do you think,
and then eventually, you know, with the threat of Iran starting firing missiles at Israel again, Israel begrudgingly agreed, sort of, more or less officially anyway, agreed to a ceasefire for the same period of time in Lebanon. So the Lebanese get some respite from Israeli bombs for this period. So the Strait of Hormuz was opened, closed, but not really opened. It's all nonsense.
Declared open, and then declaration rescinded.
Two ships
within the space of a day.
Yeah, two ships taken back because.
Although tankers, captains, pilots started sailing, and they had to get fired on yesterday to turn around.
A few made a break for it. There was a couple of Indian ones, whatever, made a break for it type thing, but not very few, if any, have actually transited. There hasn't been any change in the numbers of significant change in the number of ships transiting, again, going in or out, and that's
4, 5, 6 a day.
And it's very low compared to the 100 a day or plus, 100 plus a day that were happening before. So, So
go on. What was your next thought?
The announcement of the blockade, because obviously there was a ceasefire, and Israel had kind of agreed to the ceasefire, and that was all good. The Strait of Hormuz was open on that basis, but then it was also on the basis of they closed it again. They opened it for a day, closed it again because Trump announced
that the U.S. blockade would remain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then it's okay. Well, if that's the case, that should have been part of the deal, because obviously blockading a country is an act of war, basically, you know what I mean? Blocking a country's ports is an act of war. So,
and I think that was one of the lies Galibaf, their lead negotiator, was pointing out to. Hang on, we just literally agreed. So there must be a lot of ongoing communication all the time. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we just agreed. We'll let everyone through and you stop yours. And Trump went back on that. So.
Yeah,
we're back and forth. And yet, what I was going to say was they're preparing, the Iranians are on their way and the Americans are set to follow. They're going back to Islamabad for Tuesday talks.
Who are?
A U.S. delegation and Iranian.
Well, apparently.
Maybe not Vance.
Trump announced they're going. Vance isn't going because security reasons, whatever that means. Security reasons, Vance can't go. Probably because, I don't know. But, those negotiations, maybe there's something to them, whatever. When all you have is Witkoff and Kushner as your negotiators, the outcome is whatever Israel wants, you know. Everything's being funneled back to Israel. And Israel, wants to finish the job, basically. It's not going to let up on Lebanon. It's not going to let up on, and if Iran, obviously, if the war with the conflict, if there's another round of firing with Iran, then Israel will be very happy with that, I think, fully on board with it, and they'll want to finish the job. And who knows? There's people talking, nobody knows, but there's talk that, come Monday, you could have another, that Netanyahu and Trump are planning
another go.
Another round. And this time it's going to be huge.
Every bridge and every
this time
blah.
It's going to be the...
Every this, every that.
Yeah. So...
Every bridge and power plant. That's what he blasted today on his TS.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was complaining that Iran decided to fire bullets yesterday in the Strait. A total violation of our ceasefire agreement. Both sides then.
Yeah.
If he's...
Are you done with this one? You're putting those up now? So you're not going
to... Okay. Just...
Iran decided to fire bullets yesterday in the Strait of Hormuz, a total violation of our ceasefire agreement. Many of them aimed at French ship and a freighter from the United Kingdom. That was nice, blah, blah. My representatives are going to Islamabad, Pakistan. That will be there tomorrow for, tomorrow evening for negotiations. I think that's Monday. Iran recently announced they were closing the strait, which is strange because our blockade has already closed it, except their blockade obviously closed it before that. So double closed now. They're helping us without knowing, and they are the ones that lose with the closed passage, $500 million a day. The United States lose nothing. In fact, many ships are... The United States loses nothing, but like a couple of weeks ago was open the fucking strait, you crazy bastards. So it obviously does mean something to you. See, part of the problem here with all of this, and people have to really, really understand, is this Trump is deliberately... I don't know if he's deliberately doing it. It doesn't really matter if he's deliberately doing it or if he's doing it just because he's... that's his personality and he thinks he's right or whatever, or he's just deliberately lying, but he's just making up a ton of shit, basically. He's just absolutely making up a ton of shit that isn't actually true, as if by saying it, it'll make it true. So he's repeated this over and over again. You know, we don't care about the strait. Well, what are you doing there then? You just want the nuclear? But why are you so worried about the strait? Why are you putting a blockade then on their blockade? Why are you sending like whatever, 20 ships or whatever, 20 frigates and destroyers? And a couple of, well, not really aircraft carriers, but you know, why he's supposedly sending all those ships to open the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz if it's no big deal to you, you know? Nobody knows what the point of all this is, like at least from Trump's messaging. You cannot discern at all what the point of any of this is. The United States lose nothing. In fact, many ships are headed right now to the US, Texas. So he's saying that all the ships that can't get into the Strait of Hormuz are going to America. But like that, that's happening to some extent, but it's obviously a long way around. And as soon as...
They're all going down the Cape around Africa.
Yeah, but that's... And even then, and they're buying more expensive oil or whatever, you know. So it's not reasonable.
It's not a gotcha.
It's not a tenable long-term solution or even short-term solution. Obviously, you can't have all the ships going. America doesn't have the capacity to feed the world, so it doesn't matter with oil. So it doesn't matter anyway.
We're right offering.
In fact, many ships are headed right now to the Texas, and blah blah blah. Come there, she always wanted to be the tough guy. We're offering a very fair and reasonable deal, except you're not really. And I hope they take it, because if they don't, the United States is going to knock out every single power plant. You know, I mean, you're obviously not offering a very reasonable deal when you come, like it's, we talked about this analogy before, when you come to a negotiation, which they have before now, and these negotiations with Iran, the US has arrived at these negotiations with Iran with a loaded gun pointed at the Iranians. You're not offering. Nobody's doing that is offering a reasonable deal. It's only reasonable in the sense that if you don't take it, I'll shoot you. How unreasonable do you have to be? Look, I want to buy your house for $10. That's a reasonable deal. The caveat being, if you don't take it, I shoot you in the head. You'd have to be a very unreasonable person to die rather than sell your house for $10. That's what he means by a reasonable deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's referring there to the enriched uranium. Hand
it
over.
He's talking about all of it. It's not just that. Like, there's obviously a lot of other aspects behind this deal. It's not just about uranium. Probably they didn't talk for 21 hours about uranium.
Right.
If they don't, the United States is going to knock out every single power plant and every single bridge in Iran. No more, Mr. Nice Guy, whatever. They'll come down fast. They'll come down easy. And if they don't take the deal, it would be my honor to do. So I've read all this before. I'm having Groundhog Day. I've heard this over and over again. And it's ridiculous, you know. It's like Trump is like distracting people with inanities and garbage, this kind of garbage, you know, rehashed garbage over and over again. It's just the same talking points over and over again. He's like distracting people while some other thing happens, which is the global economy gets destroyed or something like that. I don't know. Or it's just the whole thing's so feckless and so ridiculous. You know, it's really kind of beyond belief, to be honest.
It is. I've been going through his Art of the Deal, finally, after all these years. I finally decided to do it. Yeah, yeah. And I just, in the chapter where it's just discussing like his life, he makes a mention of saying you can use a bluff to try and get a good deal, but if you keep bluffing, people just won't believe you anymore. It's in your fucking book. And this is what he has done.
But maybe he wants people not to. Maybe this is Art of the Deal part two, where you want people to not believe you anymore. It's taking a strategic ambiguity taken to a 7D level of strategic ambiguity, you know? Yeah. So, I call it the Strait of Iran in a message.
In another one, yeah. If he's feeling, you know, well-disposed in that moment, he'll say something effusive, unusually kind. Or accidentally, maybe he didn't intend it. The Strait of Iran.
He'd rather call it the Strait of America or Strait of Trump. So, yeah, I think we're dealing with I think it's all just quintessentially American, you know. Trump is not, he has no political acumen. He never had any political acumen. I think that's why he was never a politician. He never attracted to politics because he couldn't handle the fact that in politics you have to, you just not blurt out whatever you want at any, whatever you think or whatever in any given moment. You have to be diplomatic, basically. So he has no political acumen. He's got a lot of business acumen, but it's, you know, filtered as well through. It's his, it's...
Keep your cards close to your chest. Well, Trump's like, here's all the cards.
Yeah, well, no, he's...
Which one is the one I'm going to use? You don't know. It's all 52.
Well, politically, yeah, that's a no-no. But from a business point of view, obviously he's reasonably successful businessman and he knows that. But he's got a particular personality as well, which is, I don't know, I call it, maybe I'm biased in saying this, but maybe I'm wrong in saying this even. But he's quintessentially American to me, you know. Trump is what I imagine the stereotypical loud American on holidays in Europe would be like if he was a president. If I took that, and I've met a few, you know, loud American in checkered shorts and sandals and white socks shouting in a pub in Ireland, for example, you can hear him over everybody else in a brash American accent. That person, if you took that person that I've actually met on more than one occasion, and put him in the White House, yeah. I mean, I never thought it would happen, but it happened. Trump shouldn't be president. Like, I mean, it's really, there's a reason why you can't just take, you know, you have a man of the people, like understands the base and the working class. That's good. Like in a, that's fine, but it has to be a well-rounded individual who isn't just from the streets, if you know, or isn't from the burbs or the ghetto or whatever, or the project. You can't actually take someone from, like, who's exactly like that, you know, and put them. And Trump is quite close to being that. I'm not saying he's exactly that, but he, yeah, you know, he would fit very well. Like, in, you know, he could very easily have just been in terms of his. His motivation is his ambition. He could have very easily. I think it's just perhaps by luck that he ended up as rich as and influential business wise as he did. That he could have just as easily ended up being a I don't know, a garage owner, like a car dealership. He could be a used car salesman. He could have ended up there. You know, that I think that's. That's the level of person that we're talking about. That if you take just your average used car salesman, owner of a used car lot or whatever business from America, and put him in the White House, that's all you've got, basically. You know, that's why this is going the way it's going.
Yeah,
because obviously politicians. I mean, you can have good and bad, but all politicians do have to have, you know, a bit more awareness, self awareness. You know, lack of self-absorption, you know, at least, you know, compared to Trump, a reduced amount of self-absorption and self-importance. You know what I mean? You can't just take the, you know, that's what I mean. He has no political acumen, you know. He's only got business acumen. And it's fine to have that kind of business acumen that Trump has. Works very well in the business world, right? We bullshit other people and you sell shitty used cars to people at inflated prices and stuff.
And buy the dip.
And you get rich that way, that kind of stuff. But when it comes to international diplomacy and messaging to the population and being diplomatic in your speech and understanding nuances and understanding nuances and be able to negotiate in a nuanced way. And I don't think Trump really, he doesn't have that. He sees everything in a kind of black and white terms in a certain sense, you know. He just wants the easy way, you know, the easiest and most simple way to go about the job of being president and making America great again. And he just sees, you know, Iran, for whatever reason, Iran is a problem. And don't we have a giant military? Let's just bomb them. He's that kind of guy, you know. He's basically, I mean, Trump could easily be on X or on Facebook or wherever and be one of those people that are supporting Trump. Yeah. Because those people who are supporting Trump are pretty much saying exactly the same thing as Trump is saying.
Yeah.
But they have been saying it for a long time before Trump. Like, Trump would absolutely fit as just one of the MAGA bases, you know, with a red hat going USA, 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 whatever, and we have an American flag. You know, that's what he would be doing if he wasn't in the White House. So what I mean is we really have got a quintessential, typical, classic American person. I know there's a spectrum, whatever, but, you know, you take a stereotype or a generality, and Trump fits that stereotype. And you stick him in the White House, you know? I mean, it's Idiocracy. It's Dwayne Elizondo, Mountain Dew, Camacho Mountain Dew, whatever, the third. It's pretty close to that, you know? Because that's the only explanation I can think of, the only reason I can think of that this is going the way it's going and the way it's just all such a big shit show is that, you know? It's Trump and his personality and who he is as a person and the fact that he has no, like I said, political acumen or no political nous or understanding. He has no history of it and he's not going to get it at 75 years old. You know what I mean? He's been doing what he's doing the way he's been doing it for all of his life. He's not about to change and he can't, you know. Politicians, usually the most polished, like, politicians are, and even the best ones in American history, for example, in modern history anyway, like JFK and RFK and people like that come from political families. They're brought up, cradle to grave with it.
Right? Patrician class.
Right. Trump, not so much. Trump, no. Basically, for all his Trump Towers and all that kind of stuff, it's not much different than being, like I said, a used car salesman with many branches throughout the country.
In a sense, he's bought his way into that circle.
Yeah. But there's a lot of people like that who have a lot of money and don't have the sense.
If I didn't know better, it's like he seeks to keep the Trump family in that class in the hereafter. Mm. Beyond him. Now, I don't know if you saw, there was a PBS NewsHour special this week. I didn't watch the entire, I think it's like a full episode, but I saw an 8-minute clip of it. And I don't think this is just simply, I would have put this down to anti-Trumpism and slanted reporting and stuff, but it looks solid. His sons have made a fucking killing in the second term. Not so much in the first. They noted that. They really were respectful of Trump having to divest his business interests, and any of his sons, including Jared, son-in-law, they had to very carefully segregate business from government work. But this time around, their estimated personal wealth of Eric and Don Jr. is increased tenfold. We're talking $500 million worth for Eric or Don, one of the two. And then, of course, it's Jared Kushner's. He's got specific business investment from three countries in particular. So his company is a hedge fund, it's a venture capital fund, is Affinity Partners. 99% of the billions it manages in portfolio is investments from three governments own public funds, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the UAE. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you can't separate that from his role on the Gaza Peace Board and what Trump wants to see happen and so on. It is nepotism, like, but it's so fucking bad.
But that's across the board. They're only doing that because that's par for the course in Washington, D.C. Yeah. The level of corruption there is ridiculous.
They've gone full politicians are doing. Full in to do what the Bidens we're accused quietly of doing.
Well, it's, you know, why should we lose out? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone else does it, so it's grotesque. Anyway, I kind of overlook that because we're all focused on
the here, this is not Camelot.
No.
I'm sorry. It's like...
Camelot, you know, JFK's family as well was criticized because daddy made millions basically as a bootlegger helping the mob in Chicago and elsewhere. But at least once you've achieved it, you're fairly clean, right? But here is rank corruption while trying not to break the world or not caring about breaking the world economy in the process.
Yeah, it's just, it's a waste. It's kind of like, it's really frustrating. It's frustrating and it feels like a waste of time in a certain sense, a waste of energy to have to deal with Trump's,
you know, back and forths, ups and downs.
It's nonsense, basically. Swings. It's complete and utter nonsense, you know. But it's obvious that the overall agenda here, is, like we said last week, it's hard to separate the two, but Israel obviously has a major agenda in getting Iran. Bibi's been on about it for 40 years incessantly. And it's just come around in the, it seems to be the right time, whatever. But again, America has its own interests as well, I think. It's just that it's being supercharged in a certain sense by Israel, by the influence that the Israelis have over Trump. And, you know, Trump might have backed out of it, might not have started this, or at least not in this way. Don't know. I'm not going to give him a free pass in that sense. He could have done it. He might be fully on board with it. But America has their own interests in dealing with Iran, because, you know, I think America would like, we've talked about this before, about the kind of burgeoning multipolar world and stuff like that, and America would like to, I think Trump, if you put Venezuela and Iran together, you can see that Trump's goal is basically to make the US like the primary oil and gas supplier of the world, not the only one, but the primary one, and to have a kind of, to whatever extent he can achieve it, a chokehold our influence over the other producers in the world to the greatest extent possible, you know, because that's why he figures that he'd be able to secure American prosperity going forward.
Is that a but given you mentioned it quickly earlier in the show, is that a realistic prospect? I mean, the bulk of it is in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. I can see that being a realistic aim for being the core supplier for, say, the Western Hemisphere. And maybe Western Europe.
Of course, a primary oil and gas supplier to the world and slash with a chokehold, or not a chokehold, but with influence over the rest as much as possible.
Yeah.
Not a big, obviously, they're not going to be able to do it. They're not, like I said, they don't have enough gas, oil and gas supply for the world with oil and gas, so they're not going to shut down everybody else's. He knows that. That's why he's so, you know, he's so worried about the Strait of Hormuz, right? Because obviously there's a shortage. Huh? Well, pretending not to be, but obviously is. Open the fucking Strait, you crazy bastards. Because the effect on global oil prices, and that would be bad for American economy and all that kind of stuff. But he still wants to capture it in one way or another, to gain control over it. Make really good deals so he gains control over it. It's leverage. It's about leverage. Grab Venezuela's, thinks he has that down, then go for Iran's, you know. In those two places, where else is there really, you know? Others, he figures he has all the Gulf State producers already long ago in America's pocket. And the only other one is Russia. And, of course, they launched a war against Russia 5 years ago. So all of it paints a picture of elements, whoever within, you know, right down to Trump, within the US establishment, seeing energy resources being priority number one, control over as much of the energy resources of the world.
Do you wonder?
Priority number one in order to secure America's economic prosperity, like I said, going forward, in the face of China and Russia, multipolar world, etc.
Do you wonder if it wasn't Trump and it was someone else, someone more suitable? If only as a figurehead, would it be any less chaotic? Because what I'm wondering is if what we're hearing, if we're seeing and hearing this from Trump, and it's like inanity after inanity and back and forth and apparent mood swings, where is the American establishment that, of course, has railed against Trump and really hated him, but now he's more or less on board with
They're all fully on board with it, obviously.
Where's their consistent messaging or plan or
who?
How that doesn't seem to work. Like the CIA daily briefings for Trump.
Yeah.
Is it just as mad and back and forth and filling in the gaps and whack-a-mole for them as it is for Trump?
What do you mean?
I'm trying to imagine if it was Biden or Biden's ordained successor, mm-hmm. who's now president, and they still were going ahead. October 7th had happened and Iran was
next. Yeah. Next. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Would it be any less chaotic?
Yeah.
It could be.
Well, you wouldn't have Trump's messaging, for sure, which is right. The main chaotic part of it. And it's him attempting to navigate it and keep his reputation. The rest of them wouldn't have that problem. It's Trump. You have to remember, the only reason this is happening the way it's happening, like I said, is because of Trump's personality. Hmm. Because he's not a politician and he's not protected. And he can't just retreat back into the political class like all the rest of them would do, because that's where they grew up, and they just go back, fade back into the DC establishment swamp, basically. They sink back onto the swamp again. They can be there for president and as president for 4 years or whatever, and allow the deep staters, whatever, the same machinery that invaded Iraq and bombed Iraq, etc.
Let them figure it out.
Well, they would just do the same thing again, right? You'd have the same thing, but you wouldn't have this kind of messaging that you're getting for Trump or Trump. Which and the difference is that Trump wants to, he may have some element of, there's some element of him, there is obviously an element of him wanting to be a peacemaker, or him being hoisted on his own petard in terms of telling his base, his supporters, that there'd be no new wars, and he's the anti-war president, and no more Middle Eastern quagmires and all this kind of stuff. So he wants to maintain his reputation because he sees that after, I mean, he doesn't probably have much longer to live, but that after he... after he's out of politics in a few years, he'll be back out of politics for good type thing. He won't be a politician, won't be seen as a politician. There is no like bunker for him he won't be welcome in Mount Weather. Is it Mount Weather? Or one of those other bases. He's not part of that class, essentially. You know what I mean? He'd go back to his... This will have been a short blip in his life of being a businessman, where he was president for a while. But fundamentally, he's a businessman, and he's known as a businessman. He'll go back to Trump Tower. He's a bunker of his own under Trump Tower, maybe, or under Mar-a-Lago. But so he has his reputation to consider. The other presidents, obviously, that are part of the political class and brought up in that way, don't care about their reputation, because it's not really them. They know they're not the deciders there. They never tried to be the deciders, like George W. Bush. They're there just to, as in a ceremonial position, to facilitate certain things, to be told, be given scripts and told what to do by the people, the permanent establishment behind the scenes. And they're happy to do that, and then they just fade away. You know, George Bush didn't care that he was, you know, he was an idiot son of an asshole, basically, and that everybody thought of him that way, and he acted like a monkey. He couldn't string a coherent sentence together. He didn't care about any of that. You know, he just read as best he could what he was given by the deep staters, and that was it. And then he went away and started painting pictures, and he got his library. Obama was the same. They're all very different from Trump in that sense, you know.
But Trump, being a narcissist, has had a taste for being loved and wants to see it out that way.
Well, he's had a taste for being loved his whole life. He's manufactured a taste for being loved his whole life. He's been the you know, he's had that. He's been that way for his whole life, you know. It's an intrinsic part of his personality, you know what I mean? And he has that awareness and that... that's a major consideration for him, is his legacy and how he appears to the world, because he's, quote unquote, a man of the people, right? George Bush was never a man of the people. Obama was never a man of the people. None of them previous to that were men or women or whatever of the people. And that's why, that's what you're seeing. The chaos you're seeing is Trump attempting to navigate both of those somewhat mutually exclusive kind of positions. You know, one where you actually care for the people and care for your legacy and care what people actually think about you. And the other where you don't give a shit what people think about you. You're there just to fulfill a ceremonial position for the deep state. And after you're done, your 4 years, whatever is done, you just retreat back and you don't care. You never cared about the people before, and you don't care about them during, and you won't care about them afterwards. You don't care what they think. They're just the ignorant plebs. Trump, to some extent, cares, and that's why you're seeing this chaos, because he's trying to do those two things that are, like I said, are almost mutually exclusive. do what the deep staters want him to do, slash deep state, slash Israel want him to do, while at the same time, which is fundamentally mutually exclusive to the interest, are not at all compatible with the
popular
with the interest of the ordinary people. And that's why I think you're getting this ridiculous nonsense from him, basically, because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He's bitten off a lot more than he can chew. So, but he's not someone who would ever be able to admit that to himself. No. So he carries on and pretends that everything is fine.
Yeah.
And that he's winning and that we're going to continue to win.
Is there a chapter in his book about bailing out when the situation's too hot? Or is it always just barrel go through?
Keep going. Double down.
Yeah. No. Triple down. At least so far as I've gotten, it's very much like, it's interesting to get like his, because it's like a distillation of his perspective in a certain sense, where he talks about, you know, it's good to have juggle multiple things at once, because you never know what possibility is going to actually like become real. So you just juggle all of them until one of them actually, I guess, collapses into reality, mm-hmm. you could say.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to me that it's part of him. It's part of his personality. It's not a conscious choice to do these things.
No.
This is just how he is.
Yep.
And so anytime he, you know, anytime someone like this tells you what to do or suggests a way to be or something like that, you just got to understand that that's not something that they arrived at logically. It's just in their nature. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe don't juggle a bunch of flaming chainsaws at once.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that one of them is going to fall perfectly onto the wood log and split it in half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also you're seeing a clash here between reality and the American kind of perspective on the world. You know, America
and their beliefs.
Yeah, the way Americans see themselves, the way they've always seen themselves. You know, Americans generally speaking are they're kind of like Israel in a certain sense. There are people apart. You know, they've seen them. They're not really in touch with the rest of the world. They've lived in a very privileged position for quite a long time.
Secluded by two oceans.
Well, that, but also, yeah, and haven't really outreached much in terms of, you know, okay, you have a lot of Americans. There's some famous statistic that like 75% of Americans don't have passports or didn't have passports for a long time. So Americans, you know, holidayed in America or maybe they went to Canada or maybe Mexico, but that was it. So just their contact and their awareness of the rest of the world is very limited and very almost caricature, mm-hmm. whereas the rest of the world actually lives in a reality that is a bit more reality based, let's say, you know. So it's like the American projection of what the world actually is and how it looks and how it works and then how it actually works in those other countries.
So it's delusion on one hand, it's also the power, if you want to put it this way, the power of national gods, where because America has for so long been
the
exceptional nation, where for so long it has been on the top of the heat and dictate terms. Because of that, well, then obviously you can look back into history and see that we've been right this whole time and that we are exceptional and always have been because this is our state right now. This mm-hmm. is where we are right now. Then therefore mm-hmm. it must have always been.
Mm-hmm.
We must have always been blessed by God.
It's kind of like someone keeping. Yeah, it's like that's a whole narrative and makes you kind of delusional. But it's almost like someone keeping a bunch of people as slaves. And you know, let's say believing that they're the person that keeps the slaves believing that they're treating these people very well doesn't call them slaves. Mm-hmm. These people want to be here. Because I'm so awesome. You know, they want to be my friends. They want to be around me or whatever. They want to have this relationship with me, you know, not knowing that, you know, it's fundamentally an imbalanced relationship. It's not a fair relationship, let's say. And those other people have only accepted it and gone along with it because they had you forced them to.
Yeah.
Because you held the chains, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you, because of your own self-image, inflated self-image and freedom and democracy and exceptional nation and wonderful American stuff. You believe that
they gravitate to you because you're magnificent.
Yeah. And ignoring the fact that you have to actually go around throwing some shitty little country against the wall just to, you know, that part of it, just to prove that we mean business. That's unsavory. We won't talk about that so much. You know, that's below the surface.
We'll leave that to Michael Ledeen to say.
Yeah. The real reason is that, you know, they recognize America's awesomeness, and that's why they are in this subservient relationship to us, because ultimately they recognize that we're better than them, and of course we're more powerful than them, but that's only because we're better than them. It's not that we became powerful enough. It's not that we're more powerful in order to keep those people subservient, those other countries subservient. It's that our innate nature, our innate greatness, also led us to be strong militarily. Mm-hmm. And sure, now again, we have to like use it against some of the outliers or whatever, but generally speaking, the rest of them all just love us and want to be like us.
But then you don't say, none of that is actually something that you explicitly say. Anything that they do, it's always messaged as, you know, during the Cold War, you have to stop communism. We had to, during Operation Iraqi Freedom and in the Middle Eastern wars, it was to stop the terrorists. And I think you can sum it up very succinctly with the beautiful words of George W. Bush with, they hate us for our freedoms.
Mm. They hate us for our freedoms, yeah.
Which exactly. Gives you...
Because
on the one
hand... Irrational extreme... of that whole of that perspective, let's say, of that
exactly.
Of that self-delusion, basically.
Because you have, on the one hand, they hate us for our freedoms. So the freedom, then, you could say, is like the mythos, the American mythos, we are the grand and exceptional nation because we're able to do all of these things. And the they hate us part is the ignorance of what actually has been going on.
Yeah. That's what they hate us for.
Yeah.
But we can't admit that to ourselves or see ourselves in that way.
Yes.
So we have to say that, well, why would these people hate us? Well, they must hate us for our freedom. For all the great things, which makes them lesser than, right? Which justifies us then bombing them, because these are effectively subhumans. Because, like, what kind of human being would hate someone else because of freedom? What kind of person would hate freedom?
Yeah.
You know? Those people really need to have it imposed on them in some way or just be wiped out, right?
Yeah, but if you listen to Trump's own narration these past two terms, they're trying to cheat us.
Yeah.
Cheating. And that's most articulated with China and IP and stuff. But not only.
Mm-hmm.
They're all trying to cheat us. They're all screwing us over.
Any challenge to our power and authority has to be malintended. It can't be because those other countries simply are no longer happy or willing to live under the American yoke. There is no American yoke.
But the reality is the countries he usually has in mind. When he was ranting about Japan in the 1980s, he had the same shtick. But there wasn't Japan. I mean, there is an element of it because of the security guarantee and the military imposition. I know that's not nothing. But the Japanese built an economy that was roaring, as did China and the Southeast Asian nations in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
I mean, that's their own ingenuity. It's theirs. And they want to take it from them and say, well, they're stealing from us. They're trying to get an edge, the bastards.
Yeah, well, it's because of
it's
American,
all cutthroat.
Well, it's because of American freedom and American ideals that they were able to do that, because we freed them more or less after we bombed them with two atomic weapons, but we freed them in that way and then allowed them, you know, we secured them for the West, let's say, for the expanded West that goes all the way to Japan. And we prevented them from falling under the yoke of communism, which allowed that country to flourish as a little mirror image of America. So it is America's fault. So any ungratefulness from Japan in that respect would be seen that way. You know,
the irony of it is in one of Richard Verner's Substack articles, in two of them, he breaks down, you know, how Japan came to be the powerhouse that it was up until the 80s or so, when things started to crumble with the Japanese economy. And his point is that had it not been for America interceding, Japan would not have gotten some of the internal reforms that the economic ministers were trying to put through. They were trying to put through some changes, and the emperor and his clique were opposed to it. So when they removed the emperor, they and retooled the Japanese political sphere, they actually paved the way for Japan to get the economy that it eventually developed, that became this, you know, bustling powerhouse. So it's like, you kind of did this to yourself in terms of like Japan, like in a roundabout way, Japan becoming the powerhouse that then was able to buy up a whole bunch of American businesses and mm-hmm. Real estate and so on. Like all mm-hmm. of that was because of America mm-hmm. in a weird way.
But against what it intended.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was likewise with the two rising near peer countries, Russia and China.
Yeah. It's about rulers of the world, you know. I mean, this is all part of a piece with like the Second World War or even before that, and then communism and the Cold War and America coming out of the Cold War, quote unquote, victorious, the fall of communism, and then America, the Americans in the political establishment, basically the think tankers and all that kind of stuff, policymakers.
The end of history.
Yeah, it was the end of history, and now the world was ours, basically. So when you have that perspective and you've all been brought up with that, and that's been the education, the indoctrination that goes on in American political circles for politicians, etc. Well, any pushback against that just seems to be like, well, this is wrong. Like this shouldn't happen this way. Like, I mean, we had this laid out that this was going to be the new American century, and we need there's a few bumps in the road here, and we need to just flatten those out. You know. So there's complete obliviousness or complete rejection or inability to comprehend or to see the that other countries are separate, independent, have their own vision of the world, and some of them have are growing the ability to assert that, you know. Yeah. In the face of the idea of American global dominance. And for the Americans, that's just like, this is weird. Like, this is just a strange anomaly. It needs to be put down, you know? So you really, to try and understand all this, you really have to get into that level of the mindset of the people who are pushing these kind of wars, American wars for global conquest, domination, let's say.
Yeah.
You have to understand that that's where they're coming from, and that's how they see countries like Iran. They're just troublemakers, basically.
Yeah.
And it's their fault. And they hate freedom. Basically, they hate freedom, which is, you know, what we got, right? They're clamoring for freedom and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And when you saw the whole thing, you know, the killing their own people, the rehashed things, and you think, well, this is just tired old rehashed justifications for American invasion, and it's cynical. You'd have to question whether or not it's actually cynical. Sure, certainly at certain levels, higher ups, whatever. But I don't even know. I don't even know if I can say that, because I would prefer to, if I had to make a judgment on it, I would say all of them are just deluded. They actually believe it. So when we look at it and we see, well, like, you know, sending weapons into, let's say, sending proxy forces into Iran and telling the whole world that the Iranian people are clamoring for freedom and they're being massacred by their leadership and we need to save them. You're like, that's just fucking Iraq, Libya, or whatever. It's just rehashing the same tired old bullshit that mm-hmm. has been disproven time and time again. And so surely these people are lying. And when they're doing it, they're actually lying. They're consciously making, you know, mm-hmm. foisting that bullshit on us again. And how do they expect us to take it? But I think they actually believe it.
If they do, it's an even scarier situation than
it's a level of delusion. That's dangerous.
Trump blurted out recently. It's a level of delusion to the Kurds.
Yeah, it's a level of delusion that's dangerous, but it's really actually most dangerous for the person under the delusion, because there's a reality check coming, you know. But at the same time, people in that position, even though reality imposes itself and it's maybe shocking and things aren't going their way, they're not getting what they want anymore because they're clashing with reality. Their delusion is coming into contact with hard reality. Those kind of people tend to not ever stop and think, hang on a minute. Oh yeah. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe we're deluded. Maybe we should rethink our whole, let's rethink our whole worldview. But generally doesn't happen. Which just makes it worse, in a sense, because they tend to double down on it. They look for more complex, nuanced bullshit narratives to explain and justify what's happening and why they're doing what they're doing, and they just dig a deeper and deeper hole for themselves. There's only one way down, and it's down. Unless you stop when reality starts to impose on you, you're better off not picking a fight with reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then Americans have a history of calling themselves reality creators. So,
and they start picking fight. They start picking scapegoats, and they cycle through them faster and faster. It might be the Iranian regime one day, but last week it was the Pope. The week before, it was the four top podcasters.
Yeah, but that's anybody who holds up a mirror to the narcissist, the narcissist nation, basically. Anybody who holds up a mirror and is able to hold up a mirror, like actually has the clout, like the Pope or Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly and Candace Owens and the rest of them. That's why Trump turns against them, because that's what happens. If you know, Trump certainly wouldn't like you if you were to somehow get access to the White House and go and tell him some home truths. He would call you a loser, a low IQ loser, and kick you out forthwith, regardless, despite the fact that what you were saying to him was probably true. In fact, the more true things that you say to him, the harder he will kick you out of the White House. And that's what happened on a global scale, in terms of his response to these different people, and also in terms of, because it's people that can present reality to you that you get very angry with because you're a narcissist. But there's also facts that are an even more pure distilled version of reality that present themselves to you. They can come through people, through their words, or it can come through the actions of people, or just reality itself. It becomes hard to define at that point, but things start going wrong for you. But the response is the same. It's generally anger, lashing out,
and paranoia and rejection
of the reality that you're being confronted with.
Yeah.
That this can't be so, and I have to come up with an even more complicated or convoluted or manipulative, whatever.
Look at Russiagate. Look at Russiagate. I mean, the shock of Trump being elected in 2016. Prompted, in general, the system, but let's say the DC elites, to go, okay, what WTF just happened here? Okay, I know what it is. The Russian regime infiltrated our system and began turning the minds of our people. That's why when we listen to the things they say online and on radio and stuff, they're saying these strange things. They're basically saying some basic truths, right? And they came up with this fucking meta theory that the whole world had to, you know, get behind and report as fact. Today's news in Russiagate.
That's the
extreme paranoia. The narcissism isn't just Trump's, it's all of them.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Like the whole system, yeah. And that's a good example. Like, there was a whole, when they saw that Trump was elected, this was like, this can't be natural.
This can't be reality.
It can't be reality.
They claim this is a fake reality that's been imposed from without.
Yeah.
This isn't real.
Or at least it can't be real. It can't be natural. Let's say it can't be a natural outplaying, i.e. reality. Yeah. And therefore, we had to come up with some narrative as to why, as to who imposed this on us, who has been manipulating, lying, twisting, distorting, and creating this fake reality that we are confronted with. And we have to squash it, crush it, make it go away to whatever extent, and we'll do whatever. So yeah, it's very hard to say that when you realize that that's what's going on with a lot of people, it's very hard to say whether or not people are actually consciously lying. If someone who's completely deluded actually lying when they tell you their delusions, do you think they're lying? It's hard to know. There's a difference. That's probably, there's a line there between the people who do know that they're lying and do it properly. They're kind of like super evil in a certain sense. You know, they're consciously evil. Whereas the other ones are just common or garden deluded as in terms of how it happens with human beings. Like on Russiagate, they even went as far as a DNC crowd. I can't remember the name of the group. They had a name for them, but they basically made up Russian.
It wasn't CrowdStrike.
It was a different group that was set up to actually create. It was activists, as in DNC Democrat activists, who had a group of people online who were posting the evidence that they claimed existed about Russian interference in the election. It was actually them, and then they took. So it's like me writing a post, saying hi on social media. I am Igor, and I am from the Russian Kremlin, and I am here on social media to tell everybody to vote for Trump because Hillary Clinton is evil, blah, blah. And then I would take that with the fake name and present it as evidence that the Russians were, as a DNC operative, I have now evidence, which is kind of similar to what some Jews are driven to when they kind of deface synagogues or Jewish cemeteries with Nazi slogans and swastikas.
If I didn't evidence, do it.
Well, it's kind of like there's all this stuff going on in the background that people aren't aware of, and it's too complicated for the average person to see or understand, so I need to make it more overt to bring it out into the open. And if that means I actually have to paint the swastika on the synagogue, then so be it. And it's yes, it was me that did it. It's not that I'm the only one who's doing that. It's this is going on, and here's my presentation of what could happen or what is happening. It's like the swastika is being painted on synagogues all over the place, but it's an invisible ink. You know what I mean?
That you can only see it with like with the black glasses. Light.
Yeah, or it will eventually appear after 10 years or a few years or something like that. Uh-huh. And I need to make it more extant or more obvious to people right now because there's a clear and present danger, you know, because that's what I believe. And if someone tells me that's not true, well, then you can go fuck yourself because it is true, because I believe it, because it's what I've decided is true. So it's really, from that perspective, it's going to take a big shock. I don't know, shock for the whole world. And to the extent that a lot of people, ordinary people who aren't necessarily fully inured or fully, you know, deeply involved in that and have skin in the game, like most Americans, a lot of people in the West do have skin in the game or deeply invested, are invested to one extent or another in that idea of the West is best and America and anti-Islam, all the because of all the programming, basically, right? But those people are artificially deluded in a certain sense because it's been forced upon them by decades of propaganda and stuff. And ordinarily, they would be able to go, well, hang on a minute, this is bullshit, you know? So those people, I think there's the people who are actually orchestrating this, like Trump and the White House and Hegseth and all those people behind in the deep state and stuff, they're lost in a certain sense. They're never going to wake up. or they just won't care. At some point when they realize that they've absolutely lost, they'll just walk away. But although Trump, like I said, is heavily invested in his legacy. But the real lesson, I think, is for all those people who have been kind of artificially, in a certain sense, programmed or propagandized against over the past 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And have adopted this mentality by these crazy people in power. Those people need to be awakened in a certain sense, and there needs to be a shock because it doesn't go anywhere good. You know what I mean? Unless those people are woken up. But the caveat is that in order to wake those people up, it kind of has to go to bad places to wake them up. You know what I mean? It's like a person who's
things have
deluded that they can fly, for example, and they're planning to jump off a cliff, right? Mm-hmm. They're walking closer and closer to the cliff because they can fly. And you see that happening. You go, look, this isn't going anywhere good. But in order to wake that person up, I'm going to have to get a very large fish and smack them across the face. So it's going to be painful. So neither option is good in a certain sense, but mm-hmm. one is less good than the other, or one is better or less bad than the other. Yeah.
Another kind of like way of, I guess, looking at that same phenomenon would be that the more that you act like a monster, the more you reveal yourself to be a monster. Mm-hmm. And so the more you do things that are monstrous, the more people see you as a monster, mm-hmm. which means that you have to become more of a monster to then be, you know, get the same things that you were going for before, mm-hmm. which means more people are then going to see you as a monster. Mm-hmm. And so it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where the more you push, the more people wake up to the fact that you're pushing.
Right. But that means the more you're confronted with reality, where people start push back against you and start holding up a mirror to you, and then that generally makes you angry. Yeah. And you can eventually see those people as the enemy. You know, and there's stuff, the Trump White House, there's some speculation with the Trump talk this past week or two about Trump trying to, or the Trump White House, whatever, trying to, you know, gain control over the media, with that thing about them talking about revoking licenses of of some media organizations that don't say the right thing. I mean, that's an example. You know what I mean? That has never been done before, at least explicitly. You know what I mean? Of course, they had all the ways and means of doing it.
Yeah,
But to do it that overtly and that explicitly is like not a good sign. You know, I mean, you're on the wrong track. That's one of the red flags of you're on the wrong path when you find yourself having to consider the idea of actually censoring media. You've become the thing that you've claimed you were fighting, you know?
Yeah, Haig said this week out there calling all the press Pharisees.
Yeah, and we've got someone like Hegseth as your Department of Pentagon Chief or War Minister, Department of Defense?
Secretary of War.
War Minister, yeah, he used to be called War Minister. Minister for War. When you get someone like that with, you know, Crusader slogans, it's hard to deny that it's the manifestation of, in the Trump administration, it's kind of like the manifestation of what we thought
Americans,
what we thought that was going on, or what we thought that the Bush administration was, for example, yes, or the Obama administration was in private.
Yeah.
But now under Trump we have
they actually have tattoos.
The manifestation of our worst fears, in a certain sense, about previous administrations on display in the White House, and it's all under the guise of populism and Trump being a man of the people and stuff. And it's, but I don't see any difference really. You know, I mean, I don't really have any. I kind of feel sorry for Trump to some extent, but not really anymore. Because, like we were saying in previous shows, he has other options, but he's not willing to do it. And the reason he's not willing to do it, I think, is because, or to take those other options, is because of his own narcissism, basically. Because because of his own. It's not so much that he can't do it, or he's afraid to do it, maybe, or whatever, for political reasons or whatever, but it's more about, or that it would be bad for the country, or it would be bad for, you know, what he's trying to do with MAGA and all that kind of stuff. It wouldn't be bad for MAGA, I don't think. I think it would be good for MAGA.
People would swing behind him.
Yeah. So the only thing left there is his own personal reputation considerations that are preventing him from doing the right thing, assuming he's under some kind of duress, you know? So... yeah, but it's all for good anyway, because that's the way the whole system works. You know, the whole system there isn't meant to be someone who comes along and saves the people. There's no returning of Jesus and all that kind of stuff in that sense, you know, where Trump as Jesus, right? Because he was Jesus this week as well. The Jesus doctor.
Dr. Jesus.
Dr. Jesus. He was Dr. Jesus this week. So it's not going to happen, and it's not even appropriate or useful that it would happen that way, where Trump would have, would have turned into, or would have become the savior of the American people and the world by extension, because he was a true populist, let's say, a true man of the people who only had the people's interests at heart and really did. Was able to drain the swamp
and turn the ship of state around
and restore representative democracy and usher in a golden age, all that kind of stuff, all the stuff he talks about. Because that would be too easy in a certain sense, because that would still keep people in a position of, you know, looking to leaders or whatever to solve all the problems type thing. Whereas it's much more useful, I think, for the average person for things to go really pear-shaped, and for responsibility for figuring out what's going on and seeing the reality of what's actually happening, and seeing the truth ultimately, is that responsibility is put on every person to the extent that they're able, you know. So it's not that, like I said, someone comes along and does all that for the average person, you know, writes the ship of state and tells them what's right and what's wrong. It's much better if someone like Trump comes along and fucks everything up and makes everybody confused and you know, bombs Iran and destroys the global economy, and everybody's thrown into chaos, and then they're all, each individual is left with the responsibility to figure out what the hell is going on here.
Because
it's much more instructive, much better learning opportunity.
Exactly. If you were to, say, read a book on psychopaths, that gives you some understanding of what they're like and how they operate.
Yeah.
It's a very different experience from having to interact with one and getting screwed over by them.
Yeah, for sure.
It's much more visceral.
Yeah, it's gut level, yeah. Visceral, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it is it's a much better learning experience.
It is.
Even though it is a much more painful experience.
Yeah, well, it's like learning. Well, learning,
I guess it is.
Learning is painful in one way or another.
So you could
growing
say
up is painful, you know?
That it's better because it's more painful. It's a better tool for
yeah, because that's how you learn, right? Yeah, that's how it becomes visceral when you have the direct experience yourself and you have to go through the process of figuring out. It's like, you know, learning, developing, growing, whatever is by definition painful in all sorts of different ways, like from a physical level to a psychological, emotional, whatever. Like, it's painful for a kid to learn to walk, right? Get up, fall down, bang your head, fall down, hurt your knee, you know, and that's all the process of learning how to walk. Is there a way for a child to learn how to walk without learning how to walk in that way? Is there a different way that a child could learn how to walk without actually trying to stand up on his 2 feet, fall on his knees and bang his head? Is there a way where a child can just sit there, contemplate the theory of walking for a few months?
Meditate.
Work it all out with the diagrams and then just one day, boom, up and start running?
No.
The bumps and the falls and all that kind of stuff are carried with you as experiential understandings, you know, visceral understandings, like I said. And they're part of the actual ability to walk. So in terms of growing and evolving and developing as a human being, those difficult, painful experiences and shocking experiences and having your illusions cast to the ground are all part, intrinsically part of the learning process. In fact, they are the learning process. They're the meat and potatoes of the actual learning process. They are knowledge. Those experiences are knowledge in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to hope that it's not too... too painful. Maybe too painful for some people, but it's not too painful for everybody. Because then, and you'd have to assume in an intelligent universe that it would never be too painful to the point that people just wouldn't be able to stand it, dissolve on the spot. Because then what's the point?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I don't know, going to the gym and to build some muscles or something. And the first lesson is, here's a 10-ton weight. We're just going to sit it on top of your head there.
Smash.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what was the point of that?
Yeah. That makes me think, that makes me wonder about how drawn out this will be, the kind of disintegration of the American mythos. It might take some time. But then we live in an age where Tucker Carlson can get on and give a 15-minute monologue with lots of truths in it, and it'd be seen by 50 million people by the end of the week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one aspect of how it's being offered to people, you know, that you don't necessarily, because a big part of it is at least having this, the theoretical knowledge or being exposed to truth in an intellectual way, you know what I mean? And if you can, because you can at least prepare yourself, or at least you can contemplate the possibility that the way I've been thinking or the things I have believed are not true because of here's a different way to think about them. And that way, then if it ever is proven to you in a more direct way that things are not the way you thought they would be, or thought they were, you'd at least have some preparation of having contemplated it, let's say, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
or you can anticipate it, you know, your own personal delusion is shared by the rest of the people in the country. And if we're all in this delusion together and things go wrong, then it's going to be chaos. Everybody's going to be freaking out and all this kind of stuff. But if I kind of prepared myself beforehand by exposing myself to an alternative idea, or the idea that I have been deluded for a long time and here's how things actually work, or here's a closer approximation of why things work or how things work, then I maybe won't be as freaked out whenever gas goes to $20 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as one example, there's obviously many different ways that the reality, your illusions can come crashing down, you know, different aspects to it. But who knows? I mean, so I think generally speaking, that's as far as any we can go in terms of predicting how things will go, what the future holds, is that there's wake-up calls for everybody. That would be manifested on a global stage type thing. and it'll be for each person to extract out of it what they're able or they're capable of extracting from it, and to correct their reading instrument, if you know what I mean, correct their compass a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And the more you do it in advance as things play out, that's what's happening with Trump. Like, people are having a great opportunity to learn here what's actually going on. They're questioning, should be questioning Trump. You see the diehard ones who aren't. Shut up. You're not MAGA. Get out of the MAGA camp.
Tucker Carlson's so negative. He never offers any positive solutions. It's all negative.
Yeah. So, and Trump's on board with that. Like, Trump's trashing those four, Tucker, Candace, Megyn Kelly, and Alex Jones, when the other ones who have said, look, Trump doesn't seem to be on the right path here. This isn't good for America. This isn't good for, this isn't MAGA. And Trump's like, shut up, you, what do you call them? Low IQ losers.
Yeah.
You low IQ losers. You know, those guys are, you know, telling the truth. A much closer approximation to the truth than Trump is presenting. So when Trump turns around and trashes them and tries to get his base or whatever to believe him and not them, he's pulling part of his base or whatever. He's trying to pull as much of the base as possible, the Trump supporters, further into delusion. Mm-hmm. And that's setting them up for a bigger fall. You know, people are much better going their own way, you know. Turning point. It's a turning point. Point USA. I wonder what history will show.
It is interesting.
What history will write. It just so happened that before the collapse happened, mediated by America to a large extent, a group was formed called Turning Point.
Led by a man who advised the president not to make the mistake of invading that caused Iran. The global FUBAR. Yeah. who was then assassinated just before the FUBAR.
By the Israelis, who wanted to create the FUBAR. Yeah, so I have to wait and see. The Strait of Hormuz is completely open and ready for business and full passage.
Is that in the American imaginary world or that breaking news?
Yeah, I wish, you know, I think we'd have a much better, we'd do much better at, or have much more time and less distractions without Trump, because if this was like Kamala Harris or someone, or Nikki Haley or whoever, who was just doing this in the standard way, it would be a lot easier just to figure it out.
More predictable.
Well, just be able to call it all out. You'd know exactly what was going on, and you'd be able to say what's going on. You'd know who the bad guys were and who the good guys were. But Trump throwing all this bullshit in, and it's just like, what are you even talking about? Go away. Just shut up and like, you're only allowed to post on Truth Social once a week. And it has to be proofread by Grok or something. Because, whatever, dude, we don't need all that information, you know? I mean, and you're not helping. At this point, you're not helping at all. You're not convincing anybody. Again, delusion.
Yeah.
He thinks he's helping. He thinks literally that if he says stuff, that it'll come reality. Or it's more strategic than that, where he thinks, he says, Iran has agreed to this, Iran has agreed to that, Iran has agreed to the other. And he thinks everybody believes it. He thinks that's reality. And Iran immediately afterwards goes, no, we didn't agree to any of that. That's all lies. Wouldn't say any of that at all. We're not giving you our highly enriched uranium. Mm-hmm. We're not opening the Strait of Hormuz to full passage. You're not allowed in. We're not doing any of that. Trump's like, whatever. I said what I said, and it's true. Then he thinks that then afterwards, when Iran, it comes out that Iran isn't actually doing what Trump falsely said they were going to do, he can say, well, you see, they broke the deal. They broke a deal that they never agreed to, and you made up.
Oh, but that tactic worked in the 12-day war. He declared it over, and Iran was like, what? Oh, okay, well, we'll roll with that. Yeah. It was declared on their behalf by Trump.
Yeah. You know?
It's when that stops working. Yeah. When the American will to power, if you like, just peters out.
Yeah.
What do they do then?
Trump said, actually, a turning point USA, actually. He said that everybody's really happy, whoever was in the audience, that their nuclear dust, he's calling it their nuclear dust, is going to be taken home to America. 460 kilos. And it's Iran and the US who are going to use super big diggers to remove the dirt from the, you know, the
from the entrance,
the underground bases, whatever, where the nuclear dust is, and that both the US and Iran together in this wonderful hands across the divide joint operation, Trump and his digger, the Ayatollah and his digger, they're going to be working away at the excavating the thing, and then they're all going to march in, grab the 460 kilos of enriched uranium, and take it back, and then it'll be taken back to America. And he said, "We're going to take it back here."
Home.
Yeah, we're going to take it back to America. Home to the USA, he said. We're going to take it home to the USA. And I was hoping he would add on that, and I have a special announcement to make, that I will give an equal part of those 460 kilos of hydrogen uranium to every single American. Kind of like a stimulus check. You call it stimulus dust. It would work out.
Can I snort it?
You can. You could also snort it together at a specific time on a specific
on
day.
On July 4th.
Yeah.
Freedom.
It's not a lot, though. So it might, yeah. It's 0.00046 ounces or something like that per person.
Enough to feel enriched by.
Yeah, you would feel a bit enriched by. Yeah. And Hex said there was a couple of. Hexa said that a couple of two oil tankers were seized. There a couple of three or four days ago during the blockade, you know, the ongoing blockade. And he said we're going to take their 50 million barrels of oil and sell it. Of course, they would sell that enriched uranium as well. I think there's a big element of just highway robbery and all this, you know, as well. You have to remember, you know, what did Trump say about the Venezuelan oil? You know, we're getting it all, we're going to sell that, we're going to grab all the oil tankers and sell them. We're flogging it on the back. And I'm like, is America broke or something?
Yeah.
Like Hexeth is like, we seized the two oil tankers and we're going to take their 50 million barrels of oil and sell it. All right. Don't you have enough of your own oil? Yeah, but money's money, and
I want some.
This is literally just piracy on the high seas. That's what it comes down to. In case everybody's wondering, if you wanted to cut through all the propaganda and freedom and democracy and evil regime bullshit, we're just trying to get as much oil as possible from other countries and sell it for profit and stick the money in our pockets. Can I be any more plain than that? No, because that's pretty much what it is. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
It's looting at the end of empire.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is. I mean, Hegseth himself is suspected of getting rich
through
his broker.
Absolutely.
Placing bets on the eve of a Trump announcement.
Yeah. In other news this week, this photo was in the cover of an Italian newspaper. And it apparently provoked Zionist outrage because the Israeli soldier resembles anti-Semitic caricatures. I think he's a settler, actually, but he's given all the military equipment.
Yeah, he's just decked out.
But the Israelis were outraged because it it portrayed anti-Semitic caricatures. So I was like, who's going to tell him? That's another example of delusion, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the extreme.
It's like caricatures are what anti-Semitic caricatures do, right? It's like, you know, if one of your soldiers or settlers or whatever is got a really ugly grin and is kind of snarling at a Palestinian woman, which is what he was doing, abusing her in the moment,
he just so happens to look like a Neanderthal.
If that conveys...
More like a hyena.
If that encourages or in some way him doing that and looking like that and acting like that in some way encourages people to think badly of Jews, then tell me who you're blaming again? Are you blaming the people who think badly of Jews because one of your Jews is acting badly? No. Someone explain it to me like you're grok. Anyway, it's just...
Yeah. And then some of the...
I don't like reality, so...
Some of the smarter...
Call it anti-Semitic.
Zionist bots online were like, yeah, well, that photo is a bad photo of him. So someone found and published the video taken from front on of these two, and it's no better.
No, not at all.
He behaves, not just looks like a hyena. Yep.
He behaves as he looks.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we're, who knows? Nobody knows. But again, Friday. What happened on Friday? Nothing really. Was it yesterday that Trump said that thing we read out earlier on? What was the date? That was the 19th. It was actually this morning, right?
Yes.
So, Friday, everything was cool. The ceasefire was in effect, sort of. Well, there was a ceasefire at least, including Israel, partially, in Lebanon. Israel stopped bombing Lebanon, agreed to, and Trump and Iran had agreed to a ceasefire, but then there was a separate issue of the blockade, and the strait was opened, but then it was closed again because the US didn't continue to impose its blockade, but that was about it. And it all went quiet over the weekend on Friday. And I think it was on the same day it was open and closed. So opening the Strait of Hormuz, Trump announcing that the Strait of Hormuz was fully open and ready for business was false. But it had apparently an effect on the markets where oil price dropped.
And back down to 80.
Back down to 83 or something, but then went back up a little bit, whatever. Especially whenever the Iranians turned around and said, nah, that's not true at all. But Trump, well, whatever, it's the weekend, I'm going to bed, and the markets are fine. And then on Sunday, today, he wakes up and says, well, Iran's shooting some missiles at ships, and they seem to be imposing their blockade. Our blockade's still in effect. If they don't
accept
stop
the deal.
Their blockade of our blockade and accept our awesome deal to take all their stuff at the point of a gun, then we're going to be no more Mr. Nice Guy and
every plant, every power plant, every
bridge. Every power plant and every single bridge in Iran, no more Mr. Nice Guy, yeah. Again, is that going to happen? Israel would love it to happen. Don't know. Trump is such a bullshit artist. So I would much rather that he simply shut up. Mm-hmm. And stop saying stuff like that, because mm-hmm. I really don't put any credence in it at all. You know what I mean? The effect of him saying all that stuff has the effect of muddying the waters or distorting the signal that you would otherwise be able to get from other sources that are more objective and more reliable, and you'd be able to form a picture more clearly. But then Trump throws in all this stuff almost as if just to deliberately muddy. You might look at it as like a masterful plan on his part to distort the signal, so to confuse his enemies and the entire global population who are interested in it, in order to in their efforts to try and find out what's going on or figure out what's going on.
It was him trying to shake the deep state / Israel to keep them guessing, but not anymore.
No, he folded to the deep state a long time ago, and the only thing he's interested in now. Right now, since then, is he's eking out a little section of it for his own legacy, his own family, that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying there isn't some threat hanging over his head or whatever, but like I said, there are ways to deal with that if you've got any balls, but he doesn't. So he's focused on keeping himself center stage. You know, it's like someone finding out that you're not the top dog you thought you were, that there's higher ups who are telling you what to do, but so at all costs, you want to prevent that from
coming
out, because you are heavily identified with being the top dog and everybody believing that you're the top dog, because it would be really hurtful to your mangina that if people found out that you weren't the top dog. So you just shout louder, shout stuff, say lots of stuff.
Keep the focus on you.
Yeah, keep the focus on you, portray yourself, you know, talk a lot, say stuff's happening, say you're doing stuff, say you're winning, all this kind of stuff, as compensation for the reality that you know that you're aware of, which is that you're not, and that you don't really have control over this whole situation, that your hands are just to a large extent tied and you're being pushed in a certain direction. It's not even that you wouldn't necessarily want to go, but you'd want to go it on your own initiative. You'd want to be the one who decides it, but you're being pushed in that direction regardless of whether or not you want to do it or want to do it that way. You have to do it one way or another, the way it's being dictated to you, and that's very hurtful to your self-esteem. So your response is to shout louder and blanket the information sphere and talk about all the big issues. I mean, he literally said this week that the Iran and Lebanon include both would be the 9th and 10th wars. He's already done 8. That if this deal goes through and Iran's desperate for a deal and they're gonna agree to it, he's sure it'll be amazing. But that would be the 9th and 10th wars that he stopped. Well, he started. So, you know,
I'm going to break everyone's windows and I'm going to repair them. And I'm going to say how great I am for fixing everyone's windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Despite the fact that I'm the one breaking the windows. Yeah. So they need to be fixed. But that doesn't matter because all I care about is how I get to say I've fixed so many windows. What a piece of shit.
Well, I mean, you have to be quite delusional. Like, I mean, so it's I think it's very appropriate to focus on that aspect of him being delusional. You know, people don't want to believe it, but all the evidence is there that he really is trapped, and it's understandable given his personality and given the situation. It's understandable that not everybody would do this, but like I said, given his personality, that type of personality would respond in this way to this set of circumstances.
Yeah,
and it's just unfortunate that it's him. So yeah,
it's like the final boss of growing up. Hmm. The final boss of growing up is that the government is not out for your best interests.
They're not,
you know, and Trump came along and impeded that, deferred it, muddied it, delayed it.
He's your daddy. They're not your government. Government isn't your daddy. But Trump comes along, and goes, "I'm your daddy."
In his effort to protect that illusion, it's not going to work anyway. That's still coming out. You've got Tucker Carlson, whose scales have fallen from his eyes. He still speaks well of Trump, but very clearly articulated last week. He said, "I see Trump as a slave. Mm-hmm. He's not free to do enact the mandate that he was given."
Of course,
yeah.
There's no reason to think that he wouldn't.
But can you imagine, like, those two having that conversation, and Trump being told you're a slave? Like,
well, Trump knows he's a slave.
Yeah, but don't
knows, but refuses to believe it.
Refuses to accept it.
Yeah, yeah.
And thinks he can find a way out of it.
Yeah.
But again, this shouldn't be hard for people to understand. I mean, people were made aware of the idea of the deep state and the swamp during his first term.
Yeah, in part by Trump.
Largely by Trump and by what the deep state was attempting to do to him. And pretty much everybody who's a Trump supporter should be fully aware of the existence of a deep state and also the extent of their power. And all you have to do is make the next step, which is that, look, they're obviously pretty entrenched in the halls of power in the US. And if you slot in Trump's behavior and what he's done with Iran over the past year and stuff, breaking a lot of campaign promise and all that kind of stuff, the reasonable or logical conclusion is that that deep state that we know was very powerful is more powerful than Trump, and he wasn't able to drain it or do anything like that, and he's more or less caved into it, or they have him by the balls. That's all you have to conclude. Mm-hmm. It's like it's 1 + 1 = 2. You know what I mean? It's not.
It literally is 1 + 1. You have the breaking of the campaign promises. He's not filling some of the promises that he made.
The major ones.
even if some of them weren't entirely explicit,
no,
there was a very large implication, and he ran with that, and he knew very well what he was doing.
No more wars, yeah.
So that's one of them. And then, so not only is he not fulfilling the campaign promise, he's doing the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. Which, if that, like you're saying, that not only is a 180 degree against campaign promise, it's also in line with the deep state that he said that he was against.
Right.
Which can only tell you that
deep state won.
Yeah,
Yeah. And he's trying to focus as much as possible, despite his attention being drawn away to and a lot of his time being taken up with this, with his, these broken campaign promises events, right? Like Iran, waging war in Iran and stuff. He's taking a lot of attention away, but as much as possible, he's trying to focus on the things, the other campaign promises are the major, let's say the central campaign promise, which was make America great again. So he's focusing a lot on, as much as he can, on domestic politics and all that kind of stuff, right? On the economy. And he's trying to spin the broken campaign promise into, spin it back into MAGA gold, make America great again gold,
yeah.
Despite the fact that it's not compatible with make America great again, because the whole point of make America great again that he elucidated or enunciated specifically was no more wars, because these foreign quagmire wars
in
the Middle East drain America and are not good for America, and he said that many times before. But he's trying, because he's forced into that by the deep state, basically, he's trying to turn it into a positive, yeah. When it's actually mutually, they're two are mutually exclusive. So he's not in a good place. And then he posted today, like the first 20 seconds of Frank Sinatra's My Way, Frank Sinatra singing My Way, the end part, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And now the end is near, so I face the final curtain, and I'm really like, we're all gonna die or something.
We're all gonna die.
He's got two fingers on two buttons. One is the mouse to press post on Frank Sinatra's end, and the other is the red button. You know,
yeah.
So that's where we're at. We have to wait and see where things go. Unfortunately, we have to just sit and watch this. You have to watch it all. I'm sorry, I was going to say you can just ignore Trump's posts, but you can't really, because they are revealing if you know which way to interpret them. Like, you have to distill out 90% of the information, but then the rest of it, you know, where it goes, whether or not Israel gets to have its final solution in Iran or in Lebanon. And if Trump goes along with it, and if it all goes to plan, or if it all goes pear-shaped, and if, you know, open the fucking strait, you crazy bastards, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that to Iran as well, you know. My holidays are in jeopardy, or any holidays I might take, theoretically, because, Europeans, probably a lot of the rest of the world as well. Maybe not America, North America, maybe not. Probably just North America might get away with it for a little while, but European countries are saying already.
Yeah,
you know, they keep on repeating it in the media and stuff. Up, you know, 6 weeks, maybe only 6 weeks left of kerosene, you know, jet fuel for airplanes and airlines. Few airlines in Europe already talking about cutting flights for that reason. They spun it as maintenance, essential maintenance, but it's like, well, you're doing the maintenance
at the same time that all of this
that is, you're the doing the maintenance because the planes have no fuel in them, right? Yeah. Because that's a good time to do it, when it's like, you know, my car's up in blocks, you know. I think I might change the my car's out of fuel, not going anywhere. I think I might change the wiper blades. No, since I can't drive it, like, so I may as well
give it some maintenance.
Give it a wash. Give it a wash now that I'm not able to drive it anymore. So, yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Europe is surely going to turn to Russia.
Yeah, they'll have to.
That's my wishful thinking.
Does that make sense?
Italy's deputy PM a couple of days ago.
Salvini.
Gave a big speech about this. That gives you a clue that Meloni wants to, but she had him say it. It's time to make peace with Russia and get some of that communist gas back, because these freedom molecules, they ain't gonna cut it.
Cheap commie gas. Yep.
Yeah.
What else did the White House post this week? Was something... Yeah, Joe Rogan was at the White House talking about...
opioid crisis.
We're promoting DMT, basically. Trump, we got Trump really? To legalize.
Shut up.
Apparently got to legalize DMT for medical DMT for opioid addiction. I think it's a good thing, as long as it doesn't become a new addiction. It's good for, apparently it has a lot of proven track record, basically psychedelics. You know, a one-off dose of psychedelics okay. for opioid addiction. And Trump's still going to China next month, supposedly. Things don't. Have to wrap things up, though. What do you say?
He can't go with missiles flying, so.
Yeah. President is. When did he say this? Yesterday. President Xi is very happy that the Strait of Hormuz is open and or rapidly opening. It's open and rapidly opening at the same time. Our meeting in China would be a special one and potentially historic. I look forward to being with you, President Xi. Much will be accomplished.
You're going to give me that super big, awesome, amazing hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This freaking guy.
We'll see. I like the way China just sits it all out. I mean, the world's at a crisis point. And supposedly the new biggest economy, the one that's, you know, poised to supplant the US, everyone looks at it and they just go.
Yeah.
It's, don't interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake, I guess. Mm. Chinese art of war.
Yeah. So, that's what's going on, more or less. They have no navy, no air force, no anti-aircraft equipment. They have no nothing. No nothing. Have you heard that before?
They have no nothing.
If I had a dollar for every time we said that phrase.
Yeah, daily for 40 days. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Poor guy feels the need to repeat it over and over and over again.
We won. We won. By conventional terms, we won. This isn't fair. Stop.
Mm.
So he probably said that, we'll say, at least a dozen times over the course of 40 days. So 12 is, what, 400? It's quite a bit of money.
It's a lot of money. It's a stimulus check right there.
That's a new stimulus check right there.
Yeah, all right. So I will leave it there.
Yeah.
We're done. Wrap up, more or less. It's even though we only talked about the US mainly, it has so many implications for the rest of the world. Got to focus on that. You know, other things pale in comparison, really. Pale in comparison. Given the potential, you know.
It's the disintegration of the American mythos that affects everything.
Yeah.
Especially in the Western world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we'll leave it up for this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with another show on whatever, analyzing whatever steaming pile of bullshit that's issued from the Truth Social account of Trump.
Of the Supreme Leader.
The Supreme Leader of America between now and then, which will be a lot, most likely. Whatever else has been going on. So until then, have a good week. See you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can't stop the signal now.